evening, boys and girls, and welcome to the new look Trinity Timms with our new intro. Hope you enjoyed that. It's a Monday evening of the transfer deadline day. Obviously, myself, Eric Nod, I'm presenting from Reed Celtic. I'm joined by my colleagues, Joe McHugh from Video Cells and James Forrest, as usual, from the Celtic blog. Obviously, it's a big day. Well, it could be a big day, but it's not looking like it's going to turn out as we expected. So I think, first of all, we're going to dive into the transfer rumours thus far on deadline day. Obviously, the Casper Dolman, isn't it? Yeah, Dolman or Dahlberg. Casper Dahlberg rumour is that it looks like Ajax have come in to hijack the bid. In the last minute. Look, one thing you could be certain about with Ajax is Ajax are not going to balk at the price. They will offer what they want, what's wanted for the guy. I believe there's talk of him going on loan until January, and then they'll pay the money required for him, or something along those lines anyway. Obviously, Sebastian Tunetki from Hammarby, he's looking likely. And then we have this Chelsea striker. Joe, you can go with the name there. What was the name of that guy?
David Fofana. Full name, David Datro Fofana.
David Datro Fofana. Now, I never heard of this guy. Obviously, I don't follow the EPL much, but like his name doesn't stand out to me. But look, this is smacksoflastminute.com, the usual story. And this now is scrambling about on the last day of the transfer window, trying desperately to get deals over the line, to fill gaps that are totally 100% created by the board. And we are struggling big time to try and get some of these deals over the line. It's absurd with 77 days of the transfer window gone that we find ourselves in this position. And I think like the whole attitude across the fan base, across the club, across the players, is just lethargy and apathy. Everybody has just had enough of this. It's just wearing everybody out. And everybody's had enough of it. And today is the culmination of probably, I think it's going to blitz the transfer window of 2023 for the worst Celtic transfer window of all time. Without a doubt. It's blitz 2018. It's blitzing 2023. It is without doubt the shittiest transfer window of all time. And on that note, I'll hand over to Joe and get his opinion on this deadline day fiasco, because that's all it is.
How exciting is it? I saw somebody mention that the Ida deal has been announced by Swansea. So I think that's the first deal announced today. So we had Anthony Joseph telling us that they're looking to tie up four deals today. Anthony Joseph is without doubt a messenger. So the English transfer window closes at 7 o'clock. I think that's when we might spring into action and one, possibly two, but the winger coming in from Hammarby, he's a left winger. Balak Wisha's a left winger. Jota's a left winger coming back. And Daizen Maeda's a left winger. So I hope, I wouldn't rule it out that Maeda's moving on. Hopefully he's not moving on, but if he's not moving on from Celtic, he'll be moving on from the left wing to become our first choice striker. And again, that's not ideal. That's not what Brendan Rodgers... There's different messages, but I don't... Rodgers said at Tannadice, nobody knows my plans, nobody knows my thinking. And I don't think anyone knows Daizen Maeda's thinking. Some folk are saying he wants to play centre-forward because that's his best chance for the Japanese team. But I think players stay in the Japanese team regardless of what they're doing at club level. If Kyogo's scoring tons of goals for Celtic, it doesn't get him in. If Maeda's hitting the corner flag with shots at Celtic, he will be in the team. But the transfer window is an absolute shambles. It's beyond belief. In 2023, we get loaded up with seven duds identified by Mark Lowell. This time, we've managed to get rid of key players, almost certainly stripping the forward line, possibly getting overloaded with left wingers. No shape, no strategy. The left back position remains dubious, etc. I don't think anything has been solved, but It's what we all anticipated. I didn't think they were on course for such a transfer profit. I expected them to come up with a profit, but I think what they bring in and what comes in from add-ons, we might spend about 50% of it. And the only conclusion is there is the most incredible standoff between the board, the executives, and the manager. The manager expects things to happen. The board are saying, not on your life. So it's a hellish position to be in. The standoff, well, there's only one party speaking about this. Brendan Rodgers was put in front of the cameras every couple of days. And Friday, it was horrific when he came on about how the board bleed for Celtic and how they're all fighting for the same cause and they've all got the same goals, just to get slightly different ways of going about it. I mean, Rodgers, he's been put in a bit of a spot, but there was no need for him to go that far with him. It reminded me at the AGM last year when he was telling us what a fantastic Celtic man Matt Lowell was and how he worked so hard and brought in so many players. Also, he tends to talk a little bit too much at times. So it's a horrific transfer window. It is not finished yet. There's still time for a few deals to fall through. And
yeah, exactly, fall through.
The club is... I don't know what reaction will be from the support. I don't know if it's just an online reaction. I don't know. Don't know how many people have cancelled their direct debit for the Europa League. If you cancel your direct debit for the Europa League, you can still go to the games, you can buy tickets. It will mean that you've got less chance. You've got virtually no chance of a semi-final or a final ticket for later in the season. But as many people know, the semi-final, the allocation of Hampden tickets is a bit of a mystery. So you're missing out on a remote chance of getting a ticket. But who knows the reaction of supporters? Many might just shrug their shoulders and say, well, we got a draw at Ibrox, we're 6 points ahead. We finished the transfer window 6 points ahead of our friendly rivals. So what are you malcontents complaining about? So
not good enough.
There's so much to say. I'm sure James has got plenty to say.
I have just one thing to say. I'm looking at, and I'll pass over to you in a second, James. I'm looking at our squad, right, as it currently stands. And in goalkeepers, we have Schmeichel, Sinisalo, Tierney, and Sinisalo, right? At left back, Tierney and Sarachi on loan. Central backs of CCV, Jamal, Simpson, Pusey, yeah, Scales, Trusty, Murray. Right back, Ralston and Donovan. Central defensive midfielder, McGregor. Central midfield, Hatate, Ingles, Bernardo, McCowan, Nigrin. Left wingers, Maeda, Jota, Balakwisha. Striker Shin and Kenny, and right wingers of James Forrest. The squad depth is non-existent. Even if we get two players in this window, if we get that guy from Hammerby, Tunekti, and we are not likely to get Dahlberg by the looks of it, this is the weakest I have seen our squad for as long as I can remember. And it's been acid stripped by the board. They have literally destroyed our squad. And this is what we're left with. And these guys, if we get a spate of injuries, we're probably going to be going to the B team for players to keep the show on the road between now and January. And there's a very good chance with the way things are going, guys, we could be going into the next few months up until January with only Shin and Kenny as our forward men, as our strikers. And Maeda most likely thrown into the middle to shore up things there. So, James, I don't know. There's no words, expletives, whatever you want to say. There's just, it's so hard to fucking quantify this, to understand it, and why they have literally now, there's no other way to put it, sabotaged our squad. For what?
I don't need to understand it. I just need to accept it, and I accepted it weeks ago. I've been fairly calm for the whole day today. I'm at a point where I expected none, and that's what we're going to get. Very, very little in terms of strengthening. Well, I'm certainly not going to strengthen, right? I said this morning in this morning's article, and I said last night and then again this morning, the whole key to surviving this day is to go into expecting the worst. Anything after that is a bonus. If we get back to where we were strength-wise when the season ended, I would regard that as a modest victory of sorts. The idea that we're going to strengthen and that we'll come out of this window significantly stronger in any department is just never, it was never going to happen. So I refuse to be disappointed about it not happening. This is who we are now. This is who we are as a club now. The latest update that we've had is that we might sign the guy from Chelsea on loan, right? This is the guy who's been loaned out more than a 90s scud book. But we may get him on loan for a year or whatever. The word on the second striker, the one who's supposed to replace Kyogo, is that we are waiting to be offered one. So let's imagine how that phone call is going to go. Hi there. We have some shite we'd like to offload. Now, I know you've got shite of your own, but our shite might be slightly better than your shite. So we just want to know, is there any of our shite that interests you? Have a look. Get back to me. Let us know. And that's who we are now. That's how we are run. And it has gone exactly as I expected it to go. I went into the day with no expectations of being satisfied. And if I come out of it at the end of the day with no satisfaction, it will have delivered. And it's the only day in this transfer window that has delivered.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fair reflection on what we've had to put up with throughout the whole of this transfer window. For me, it's just, I'm the same, James. I've just become lethargic, apathetic about the whole thing. I don't expect anything anymore. But I'll tell you what I do expect. I do expect the fan base to raise concerns about this and raise it in the right way. This board has without doubt shown throughout this window, throughout this last, we'll say 8 months since last January, since the day the Kyogo was sold, that they are working at odds against this club. And we cannot have a board in this club that is working against the club, because that is what they are doing. We are now the weakest, as I said, that I can recall us being in many years. And that is simply down to the fact that they have asset stripped everything that we had that was worth money. And now we're still on transfer deadline day, where we're going to make money out of the sale of Adam Ida. We're going to make money out of the sale of Yang. We're going to make money out of the sale of O, who is going for 24 million, I believe, to a German club, is it? So there's a sell-on clause there. Guy should have been, again, we look back at O, he's probably a guy who should have been given an opportunity to try and play a bit more. Who knows what we would have got out of him? He's obviously flourished since he left the club, and now he's commanding a transfer fee of 24 million. It's all what-ifs and, you know, maybes and what could have been and what might have been, but what is for certain is this squad has been decimated, and it's been decimated by our board. And it's that simple. And we can keep an eye on it throughout the show and, you know, on the news. And I don't think there's much going to happen. I think we all know there isn't much that's going to happen. But what I would say is it brings us along to yesterday. And I'm not overly interested in talking about that because, to be quite honest, there is fuck all to talk about when it comes to what happened at Ibrox yesterday. There's literally, other than Don Robertson's inexplicable decisions throughout the game, I pretty much expected the way things turned out. The one thing that did stand out to me most of all in yesterday's game is, where the hell is Kieran Tierney? Or where the hell is the Kieran Tierney that we used to know? Because that guy is a shadow. He's an absolute shadow of himself. Now, I don't know if it's part of the apathetic atmosphere and malaise that's settled on the club, that this is all filtering down to the players and the players are just feeling almost the same as the fans. But the performance from Kieran Tierney yesterday just, I don't know, that just wasn't Kieran Tierney. But the performance all round was, this is a team that shipped 9 goals in 2 legs against Bruges. And we didn't manage a shot on target against their defence until the second half. And late in the second half. That speaks volumes for where we're at right now. Absolute volumes for where we're at right now. And that's what we have. this is now what the manager has left. This is what he's tasked with, trying to, you know, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, whatever terminology you want to use for it. He has to get goals out of that squad somehow. And if Shin Yamada and Johnny Kenny are the only two guys we've left as strikers, because the way things are going, it could be that that is the scenario. I fear for what lies ahead. I really do. And I read out the squad, the current squad now, and there is no depth to the squad. It's paper thin. And if we have a spate of injuries, like I said, we'll probably be relying on the B team to carry things forward for us.
Careful. They lost 5-1 on Saturday.
I get that, Joe, but that's what I'm saying. What options, if we have a mad spate of injuries, what options have we got left? We're looking at a scenario like in 2021 when Ange was left. Put that scenario that you always refer to, 101 Moffat was the last. No, obviously it's changed now, but before we talked about that, we have a scenario where there'll be players pulled in from the B team because we're left with no options. We won't have any other options. Are we, like, you know, what the hell else are we going to be able to do? So, look, I'll pass over to you, Joe. You can give me your impression of yesterday's game. For me, it was just there's nothing you can say about it other than nobody was trying. Nobody put in the – I've never seen such lack of effort in a Glasgow derby as there was yesterday. I would expect no effort from the other side because they're complete and utter mints. But from us, the lack of effort was just shambolic. So, Joe, what's your take on it?
First of all, I'll defend Kieran Tierney and I'll defend every player that's wearing a Celtic jersey yesterday, because that club is getting run down horrifically. Players all know football's a small village. They all know what's going on. They know... Last week, they flew out to Kazakhstan with Adam Ida, and quite clearly, Michael Nicholson was involved trying to get rid of Adam Ida and probably some others. I'd be amazed if he's not still trying at this minute to get rid of Daizen Maeda, because that gets him applause and that gets him a slap in the back in the boardroom. So the chief executive is trying to sell off everyone possible, because that's instructions that he's under, and it's a lot easier to sell players than it is to buy players. And in tandem with that, the chairman is, he's got his group of messengers, and Chris Boyd has now joined those messengers. Chris Boyd has got only one comment to make about Celtic, and that was, oh, £26 million, all stuck in the bench, Brendan Rodgers is a dud. Well, we all know that £26 million of players shone in the Champions League last season, but every player has been run down. They know the atmosphere around them. They know that they could be getting sold. They know that their teammate could be getting sold. They know that there's no plan for the club. They know that the supporters are unhappy. And, well, Rodgers had his famous Trinity comment, not about us, but when he came back, they need to have the players, the supporters and the club all on the winning page. That is not the case. And it's all down to the issue over the manager, the people that forced him to leave in 2018, 2019 are still there. They don't like him being back. They certainly don't want him to be successful. So if we can scrape the league by a point or two, Rodgers leaves and then they bring in their project manager, someone very compliant that will do exactly as they're told, then that's ideal. So the players, they get a free pass from me. No one is playing well. It started at the turn of the year. As soon as that own goal went in from Young Boys Bern and Nicholson signed off and selling Kyogo, that was the start. That was things going downhill fast, and there's no sign of it getting better. So you can bring in any player just now and it's not going to make any difference. I'm sure Dolberg has been in touch with Kasper Schmeichel and others and said, maybe Celtic isn't the best place to go at this time. Hold fire, go back to Ajax. The guy at Hammarby, well, if you're playing for Hammarby in the Swedish league, I think you'll move to Celtic. So who's that, Joe Gate arrest? Well, here we go. There we are. Green for go. Sounds a bit like Disco Dave. So it's all the fault of those nasty players all those players that Brendan Rodgers negotiated the transfer deals for, wrong, wrong, wrong. Those players are given their best. Those players did well in the Champions League last season, and the transfer fees reported and gloated on by Chris Boyd and others were negotiated by leading sports lawyer Michael Nicholson. So I give the players a free pass yesterday. We avoided defeat. It could easily have been a defeat. That's the way this season's going to be at Celtic until somebody steps in and makes some changes, bangs some heads together. Maybe it needs a Mark Lowell sacking or moving on to explore other opportunities. But the players are excused yesterday. I thank them for avoiding a defeat yesterday. It would have been a nightmare. And it's not going to be a good watch the rest of this season unless someone comes in and does and takes ownership. But it's all past the buck. The chief executive isn't a chief executive. The chairman turned up the Champions League draw last week. Just think about that. Two days after losing out in penalties to Kaira Almaty, and the chairman says, I'm going to go ahead with my booking for the Champions League draw. Freebies, bit of networking with some big hitters in UEFA, and I can console myself that I'm some big noise. That's the state of play at the club. So the players get a free pass. Thanks for avoiding defeat, and best of luck going forward, because you're going to need it. Every game is going to be a hard watch. That's enough from me. And if Disco Dave and his friends are still out there, dream on. You're on the same side as Chris Boyd.
Yeah. I'm not taking away from, you know, what the play. I agree with you, the players do get a free pass, but what I'm saying is that I do feel that Tierney is a shadow of himself. Obviously, he's not fully fit, so that's understandable. But
everyone's a shadow. Everyone's a shadow. Compare them. Last October, RB Leipzig and Aberdeen, the semi-final, all flying. Look at this. A lot of the same players yesterday, unrecognisable.
Yeah. It's a sad state of affairs, but James, your take on yesterday's game?
Well, it's not often I am applauding one of you guys for a comment in the middle of his comment. Joe's nailed it, absolutely nailed it. The decline in this team started the night we conceded the late goal in Munich. Because for a lot of these players, that was the moment where they realised that this is as good as it gets at this club. This moment right here, right now, is as good as it gets. This club is not going to go out and sign the kind of players that will get us past this team next time around, because they had gave up on this tie before the players even went out on the park. The players had made it clear the board had made it clear that they buy completely into the Chris Boyd philosophy of the glass ceiling. And it's your club that keeps us under the glass ceiling. They have no intention of ever trying to break through it. And that night in Munich, those guys realised that this is as good as it gets. This club doesn't have any ambitions to take us beyond here. And that has filtered through the whole club. The manager, the players, everybody is just sick of it. Everybody's just gutted. But it did something else as well. And it kind of happened with the sale of Kyogo. It told these people that not only are we a no ambitious club, we're not a serious club either. The sale of Kyogo, when we still had a game to play, told the whole club, manager, players, everybody, that they had essentially written that game off and they didn't care about getting further points and they didn't care about the possibility of moving up the league table and the ladder and maybe even getting an easier draw. They were happy just to have got through. And that was it. As far as they were concerned, it was mission accomplished, job done. Knew we can sell a player. And that was the attitude. And every player realised it that night. And in Munich, it kind of hit them all that this is it. We've scaled the mountain. This is it. Does it get better than this year? There won't be a return to this next season. We're not going to be back here next season aiming to go that step further. And when you see the performances of guys like Callum and Kieran, it's especially obvious that they're just sick. They just feel absolutely sick at recognising and some of them may be recognised for the first time that they're not a serious club with serious ambitions. And I understand why performances have fallen through the floor since then. It's no difficult to recognise that these people are just, they've just ripped the heart and the life and the soul out of the club. And nobody any longer buys it. Nobody any longer buys that this club has ambitions or goals or strategy or anything else. And that must be hard working inside Celtic to realise that.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, James. Terrible for them. Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with they've ripped the heart and soul out of the club. And you see, the problem is now we're left with a shell. We're left with a shell of what Celtic should be and what Celtic was this time last year. And you come to the point now where you have to ask the question, where do we go from here? I mean, the fan base is heartily sick of this. They've just, I mean, Dave the Rave just said, as a happy clapper, he's even, I'm extremely let down by the board. So, if that's Dave, Disco Dave in disguise, I don't really care anymore. I think they're all starting to see, everybody's starting to see it now. The mask is off, anyway, on the board, that's what you can say. They've really shown their true colours in the last few weeks. And we now, as the fan base, need to become united. We need to find a way to work through this because they are literally sucking the life out of the club and all that is left is a hollow shell of what Celtic used to be. And we need to find a way to put the heart and the soul back into Celtic. And ultimately, we, the fan base, are the heart and soul of Celtic. These guys are not. It's clearly and patently obvious that these guys are not. They have none of the best interests of this club at heart. For them, it is an asset and it is to be stripped of every valuable asset. It's an object, should I say, that has to be stripped of every valuable asset that it can possibly be stripped of. And it is managed decline on a nuclear basis now at this stage. And we as a fan base, we have to find a way to stop this. We have to find a way to stop the rot. And the thing about it is, I don't know, like, where do we start? And I wanted to come to you, James, on the subject of, you know, the Celtic Trust. And I wanted to ask you about Duncan Smillie and his comments. I mean, he seems to have the right idea. And the right, you know, he's coming out with all the right sound bites in, you know, trying to get the 10% shares for the fans so that the fans can have a voice. The guy has experience of being, like, obviously he's had experience with Glasgow basketball, you know, with the basketball side of things in Glasgow and run the club, what's the name of the club in Glasgow that plays basketball that he has run? So yeah, he understands. Yeah, he understands, obviously, on a smaller basis how to run a club. But he's making the right sound bites and he seems to have the best interests of the heart or of the fan base at heart. So I think the first question you got to ask is, like, how do we go about getting that 10% that we need to have a voice? Because the problem is now everybody feels impotent. All of us fans feel impotent because we don't have a voice. There's nothing we can do to shift these guys. These guys can set the fucking club on fire and we can't shift them. And they literally have set the fucking club on fire. Let's call it spade and spade. And they're fiddling while Rome burns. They don't give a shit. You know? So, look, I'll pass over to you, James. Where do we start? What's the starting point at stopping this rot and putting out this fire that they've started?
Well, there's two things that are absolutely imperative. And the first is that we need to stop using the word can't. We haven't tried to shift these people. We've not made the slightest effort to even put them under sustained pressure. So the idea that we can't shift them doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. If we'd made an effort and we'd gone to the mat and we'd tried campaigns and everything else and we had failed, then the word can't becomes a credible word to use. But it really isn't where we've done nothing. And I have a sneaking suspicion that these people were used to their soft seats and their easy life. And I think if they were put under sustained pressure, some of them would walk away, rather than continue to be put under that kind of pressure. Nicholson's not an idiot. Nicholson could go away and start his legal practice and make a decent living. He doesn't need to be Celtic CEO coming under constant fire every single day. He doesn't need to be walking into the stadium and getting booed and people giving him grief. He's never experienced it, though. So we don't know how he will handle it. One guy on Twitter who seems to think he's carved out of wood and would handle anything. Do you know what? I have my doubts. I genuinely do. I think some of these people have had the easy life so long that we could fold them up like an iron board in 2 seconds if we put pressure on them, and we did it in the proper way. So the first thing we have to do is get out of this headspace where we can't move these people. I think we could move these people, and I don't know that it would take an awful lot. Desmond is harder to move because he's an island and he's not going to give up easily. Desmond could just sit there for the rest of his natural life and see this out. I have no doubt that he could do that. He will not be pressurized to sell or anything. But you see, there is a pressure point for Desmond. Desmond isn't the owner of this club, no matter what he might think and no matter what some people like to suggest. Desmond gets away with it because we have a weak board of directors. Because the people around that table are gutless frauds. They are not leaders. There is not a leader among them. If there was, they would tell Desmond to bolt, and they would tell him that the club is run in the club's interest and not just his personal interest. I think it's probably a gross failure of fiduciary duty for them to run things the way they're doing. I don't know how many you're aware of that Pat McVeigh altered is pushing a lot of stuff right now prior to the Celtic Trust AGM tomorrow, but I'm going to be writing about that for the rest of the week, or at least writing about it for some of the week. And some of his ideas are excellent. The one in particular that I like is the idea of a Celtic membership scheme. It's an idea, by the way, which, as I said on CQN today to a couple of people, I would have opposed to my dying breath 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I would literally have picked that as the ditch to die in. Opposition to that would have been so 100% extreme. And especially if the club was running it along the MyGels type model. But his idea, his version of it, is that the Celtic Trust expands its membership beyond shareholders and sets up a Celtic membership scheme. And one of the things that he wants today is he wants to use some of the funds from a Celtic membership scheme to hire a good lawyer, a good legal team to challenge the way the club is run. Because it probably is some kind of violation of fiduciary duty for a non-executive director to dominate the board and to dominate the strategic direction of the club. That's probably against the law. And we should find it. And we should be pushing on every single button we can to find it. We should be putting pressure on everywhere to find it. And all these ideas are excellent and they're worth taking into consideration, paying a lot of notice to. And he's trying to get them adopted by Smiley and other people at the Trust. And it's not before time. The Celtic Trust would benefit from changes along the lines. The Celtic Trust should represent supporters and not just shareholders. They broaden their base for a start. They bring in all kinds of people who right now aren't interested in getting involved with them. And it increases their position and gives them a better opportunity to actually get things done. 5% is the number they're looking for. And that's actually, it shouldn't be impossible to get. And 5% actually allows them to do a lot of things that that individual shareholders can do. They can call a general meeting. They can propose resolutions to it. They can oppose certain things. They can really put these people under pressure and they can quiz them on how they're running the club. As everybody who follows me on Twitter knows, I've been pushing the Michael Nicholson thing for the last week or two, and I'm going to continue pushing it every single day until that guy gets in front of the fans and actually makes a statement. But it's not enough to ask where's Nicholson and show us the plan. It's not enough to keep on counting how many days it's been since he was appointed CEO without actually coming and telling us what the plan is. We have to put a firm deadline on show us the plan. And I think with the AGM in November, I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that as a time frame for it. Because let's face it, if an organisation like Celtic doesn't have a 5-year strategic plan sitting in a drawer somewhere, then these people have absolutely failed at every level. And that's the kind of pressure that we should be bringing to bear right away. I know there are a lot of people who want to take more immediate action, right? And I get that. I completely get it. There's a lot of people talking about cancelling direct debits and protests and all that stuff. And there is a place for all that stuff. There absolutely is. And the more supporters show their anger, the better. But in terms of thinking strategically, I think the least we should all be doing is asking these people where the big idea is and when they're going to produce it. And if they can't produce it by the AGM, then we've got a fight on our hands. But I think it's one that we'll win, because I don't think these people have ever been under pressure, and I don't think they will handle it if they're put under pressure.
Okay. Record viewers tonight, guys. We have 309 on the live show, and that's a record for us. So the interest is there, no doubt about it. I think we had a great show last week, and with the addition of Russell Boyce from the Boycey Bus, I think that definitely was a good show last week. Joe, your feeling on it with regards to change, how do we go about doing it? Do you echo what James says? Do you feel that this is where we need to start? Do you feel that 5% is a realistic goal and a realistic, you know, aim for us to actually achieve?
Where to start is going to be difficult. The Trust has had the same people in charge for 20 years or more, and they really need to step aside, just get out and allow whoever to come in. So the new guy putting himself forward, he seems decent. He's got fresh ideas and he's got experience. So that would be a good start. On the pressure, I think Nicholson would walk away pretty quickly. He was being groomed as Lowell's successor, but things got so bad during the COVID season that he realised that this would be the cushy job, I think it is. And that's why Don Mackay came in. Then who knows? That's an interesting story. 72 days of Don Mackay inside Celtic. And then Nicholson was reluctantly pushed up to take on the interim job of CEO, and then even more reluctant to take it on a full-time basis. So I reckon if it's small steps, but I'll certainly be concentrating my content online on Michael Nicholson. It was great to see the three banners in the stand at Ibrox yesterday down at the corner flag. And it was very interesting that Michael Nicholson and Peter Lowell had better things to do yesterday and go to the match at Ibrox, because, as we know, an old firm game. Yes, I'll use that phrase. Nope, they didn't go. Well, there's a picture. There's a picture of the director's box.
And they weren't in it.
It was Chris Mackay, Brian Wilson, and Sharon Brown. That was the front row from Celtic. Behind them, the absolute nomad that is Ian Jameson, Tony Hamilton, and then Roy Aitken, Tom Boyd, and Paul McStay. So they didn't go to the match yesterday. So,
probably didn't like the idea of getting applauded by the home crowd.
I mean, they loved their old firm. I mean, they could have been talking away to Andrew Kavanagh and the American owners, the 49ers, and all sorts. So it seems very, very unusual that they decided not to go to that match. So I reckon Lowell will never step aside, as we know. He's hard-nosed, thick-skinned, and all the rest of it. There's not a chance of him ever moving aside.
Money for nothing and your tickets for free.
It's a point I was meant to bring up from last week. But Boycey was asking why they stay on and suggesting that an improved modern Celtic would embarrass them, and they don't want to see that. The other side is there's the paperwork from 2012, and the last thing that they want is anyone having a little rummage around to see the things that Celtic agreed to, the paperwork trail from 2012. So that's another issue. It's a well-travelled issue that's been discussed many times. But Lowell will stay there till his final breath, but or he'll attempt to. I think Nicholson, he's getting a bit of... There's a quote on his salary that was kicking about last week, but that was a year out of date. That was his salary for the year to 30th of June 2024. I suspect he was close to £1 million for the year to 2025. I think Nicholson's possibly 50 or under. So I suspect if there's a bit of pressure, I'm getting a bit of pressure. If there's a bit of pressure applied to Nicholson, then he's young enough and he's qualified. He could go off and do something else. A bit less pressure, less money. But if he's not earned enough after he's been at Celtic for about 10 years, first as some legal nonsense, and then the last 4 years as CEO. So he really ought to be fairly well off. So I could see Nicholson wanting out. I don't think there's any chance of Lille doing it. I don't think Dermot Desmond will. But if you can make life uncomfortable for them, and that's by peaceful means only, by protests, yes, by banners, by social media, if Celtic social media... I think this weekend there's a Celtic play coming on at the Pavilion, which will be all backslapping about what a wonderful club we are, and aren't we so much loved by everyone, and it's so good to be part of the Celtic family. I think it's sponsored by Korean Quick News, but the support can make life a bit difficult for them. I could see Nicholson moving, and you wonder what sort of character would want to come in as CEO, working under the chairman and the biggest shareholder. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the trust meeting tomorrow, if there's new energy. I think they've maybe been here before. That was in 2020, 2021. Nothing much happened from it, but perhaps there's some fresh life and impetus. Folk have had a taste of success. Last season should have been a marker. Instead, last season in the Champions League looks like the high point, and we're back to our comfort zone of Thursday nights and slugging it out with our old firm business partners in horrific games of football. So, I'll have a glass half full that things can start moving. It wouldn't be easy, but I suspect Nicholson could probably be convinced that he's got better career and lifestyle prospects doing other things with his life. Lowell is in with the bricks. He'll be there. He'll be there as long as Michael Kelly and Chris White and all the others that were moved aside in 1994. But we'll see. So, and another thing, it doesn't need to be some concerted action. Nobody needs to take instructions from anyone else. If you don't fancy going to four Europa League Thursday matches over the next couple of months, don't go. You don't need official word, a boycott or anything like that. If you don't fancy, they're still to price it, maybe £35 to £40 a game. The first game against Braga is a 5:45 kickoff. You can watch it on telly. Your £35-£40 can be spent in other ways. And the same when they come out with all the merchandise and all the nonsense. So it's up to each individual. You do not need instructions from on high, what to think, what to do. Do your own thing. Perhaps there might be some inspiration coming out of the Celtic Trust. It's interesting, James, talking about legal challenge, the way the club's been operated. I'm still dubious about it. I suspect that the chairman is a man driving everything. But if it is a non-executive director with a 35% stake in the club that's driving everything, then all the non-executive directors have been failing miserably in their duties. They have to question and probe at every chance. Are we doing the best practice? Why the hell have we got so much money? Why do we pay so much corporation tax? What happened to that wonderful project at Barrowfield, our shiny new training ground, which was due to open in November 2024? Why is the academy? What the hell are they doing in the Lowland League for the fifth year running, etc., etc., etc.? But while the chairman is still around, it's going to be a tough fight. But there might be a few that want to step aside. What was it? Ian Livingston? He was a non-executive director a few years ago. He stepped aside. Perhaps others might want to. Tom Allison's been there for 22 years. Brian Wilson, 26 years. I don't really see what future benefit. They've had a fantastic run out of it. They've got another four jollies coming up for UEFA trips, but do they really need it? They're getting on a bit. They can take a back seat and let whoever is driving the policy, they can take the flak and explain things. So that's my soapbox, Eric.
Can I ask
you? Yeah, I mean,
Can I cut in for a second, mate? You mentioned Brian Wilson, right? Brian Wilson's a good case in point if you want to talk about the lack of strategic direction and the lack of like proper strategic thinking that our board of directors does. When Brian Wilson was appointed to the board, Brian Wilson brought with him a certain amount of knowledge of Scottish business and most importantly, perhaps Scottish politics. He came in as a minister for trade just before he joined our board. And he was quite a high flyer in Scottish Labour and was well quoted in Westminster and places like that. We are way down the line from then. We almost, this country narrowly missed out on we've had an SNP government in Holyrood for well over a decade. The Labour was reduced to, I think it was one seat in Scotland. In a general election not even that long ago. And Brian Wilson has spent a lot of the time since deliberately antagonising the Parliament and Glasgow City Council and other people who we needed on our side. I mean, that's what he spent his time doing. Basically SNP baiting, right? And whatever your political outlook and whatever your thoughts on that are, it is strategically disadvantageous to us to have someone on our board of directors acting in that fashion. Right, and that's just one tiny example of how screwed up our thinking is. That there was an argument once for having him on the board on the basis that he was a political player and that helped us. But now it's just an absolute hindrance, and I don't see what possible good he serves any longer. All he does is creates problems where they don't have to exist, and it's madness to me. It's just crazy.
Yeah,
but he's a case in point in how we get things like this wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there's a hell of a lot of comments coming through, guys. It's hard to keep up with them because there are, like, we're at 362 now on the live show. That's again, once again, a record. But there's one I saw earlier on there where somebody said they don't read the media, they don't read fan media, they don't read the blogs. On the contrary, guys, they do read what we write. Because my company, the company that I work for in my full-time job, has a dedicated team that is actually plugged into all media that mentions anything to do with our company. So effectively, I would imagine Celtic have a similar engine where they have an eye, they keep an eye on all media. And as we know, James, from last year, we got 100% confirmation that they do read what we write. So I think that our voice... If people think that our voice isn't heard by them, I'm sure they read what we write with disdain, and you know they show the contempt that they show the fan base. But the fact is, the truth hurts sometimes, and they do read it. And when the truth hurts, they're very quick to lash out. And as bloggers, I do feel, from our perspective, it's time for the truth screw to be turned further. It's time for us to talk about things that we haven't talked about in the past. We need to start talking about things that show these guys up for the charlatans that they are. If you think that they don't read what we write, think again, they do. But besides that, that's besides the fact, you know, that I feel all the things that you guys are talking about and the starting points that you guys are talking about are very good. But I just go back to one thing that Joe, or a point that Joe raised, and Joe raised the point of 2012. That's a can of worms that they really don't want looked at. And it's a can of worms that a lot of us have a lot of in-depth knowledge about, and we've seen a lot of things about it, which feeds back into what you were saying earlier on, James, about getting a legal team in to look at all the things that that could be done and to verify whether or not Dermot Desmond's, the way he acts, is on a legal basis. And you see, when you're a board that behaves like you're untouchable, ultimately these are the kind of things that are going to come and bite you in the ass. You know, these are the kind of things when you feel that you can behave the way you do without any repercussions, without any accountability, and people just become sick and tired of it. We've just passed 400 on the live show now, guys. People become sick and tired of it. What you're going to have is people looking at things that can hurt you back, because you're now hurting the fan base. You're now hurting us to our core. We're all hurting. and we're not happy, and we're not happy with the way things are going. So people now are going to be looking at ways to hurt you. And that's the message that we need to be sending to the board, that these are the things that are going to start happening if you don't start to take our support seriously and what we want for the club. And that's been the crux of the issue all along. They've never taken the fan base seriously. They've taken the living piss out of the fan base when it comes to... And Boycey made a very good point last week when he said that incrementally, every season, pricing goes up. Every season, merchandise goes up. Every season, food goes up at the food stalls. Everything increases in price, but everything declines on the field of play.
Yeah, because you're still getting your juice itself like part a plastic bottle poured into a plastic cup. I
mean, yeah, and I mean, this is what's happening. They're
right across the club. Right across the club. Standards are up. The
media pushing
before Champions League games at 10. Because, I mean, the people who run our club should be mortified by that alone. It's absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the costs for the fan, the average fan, are rising and rising and rising. And in return, we're getting the shit show that we're looking at right now. And that's just not good enough. That's you can use all the euphemisms, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. You've crossed the line. You've done this. You've done that. You know, the reality is they've crossed the line now, and everybody. I mean, we've never got a response like this in our show. And fans are just looking for every outlet that they can at the moment to see, like, to hear voices, you know, who talk sense about what's going on at the moment. And one thing that we've always done, guys, and we can't deny that fact, is we've always talked sense about what goes on at Celtic. And what's happened now is the chickens have come home to roost. Everything that we've discussed since we started this podcast in December of last year has come home to roost. And for all those happy clappers out there that slagged the living crap out of us and thought that we were talking shit and that we were full of shit and all the rest of it, I hate to say I told you so, guys. And I did say all along I'd eat humble pie if none of this came to pass. But the reality is it has all come to pass now. Everything that we've
predicted. We would have liked nothing better than to be proved absolutely wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely, we'd have liked nothing better than to have been proved wrong in all of this. We don't want this for the club. We don't want a shit squad like we have at the moment. Now, I'm not saying it's a shit squad. It's a depleted squad. The players aren't shit. They didn't become shit overnight. But they're dealing with a shit situation, which makes them feel like shit. And the end result is what we see on the field of play. You know, so it's gone beyond the point of no return now. And you can see it. We're inundated tonight. We're heading for 500 now on the live stream. And I can't keep up with the comments. I genuinely can't keep up with them. So that tells you exactly what the feeling is. And as I've said often enough, guys, we've an average of 3,000 views on our show, right? We're only new to this game. We're in our infancy. But that's 3,000 people who pay attention to what we say. That's 3,000 people who talk to other people about what we say. So the message that we get out there, it does get out there. And we can see, obviously, the message is going to get out there tonight. And it's the message that keeps each week, as you've said, James, as you've said, Joe, the fans need to do their bit. We'll do our bit. We'll keep talking about it. We'll keep pushing the narrative. And we'll keep writing about it every day. And eventually, the screw will turn. And one thing before I move on to the next point, because we do need to move on to the next point, I'll say about Peter Lawwell. You were saying, Joe, it's going to be very hard to shift Peter Lawwell. I don't know about that, because when he came under pressure in 2021, he fell on his sword very quickly. And the reality is, because they've left this squad on the bare bones of its arse, if we get a bad run of injuries, we could see us falling off the pace. And if we fall off the pace like we did in the 10 in a row season, you can see the pressure really, really coming down the tracks. Because all of that situation was it was self-imposed by the board and Dermot Desmond, because they wouldn't get rid of Neil Lennon. But they did actually try and invest in the squad for the 10 in a row. They did try, but they didn't act on the situation with Neil Lennon when that went out of control. The difference here is they haven't invested in the squad adequately, and now the squad is on the bare bones of its arse. And if it runs into a bad run of injuries, hearts could be overtaking us. Even the Ibrox side, I see the guys are saying they bought another striker. Who's this? I haven't been following their news today, so I've been following ours. I know they brought in Mayovsky. Did they bring in another one?
I think they brought in some
£1 million in an Everton reserve.
It's got seven career goals. It's a bit dubious. Kev Thirlwell signed him for Everton previously, and now Kev Thirlwell is at Ibrox. He signed him there, so I'm sure it's all above board, and he's the best man for the job. But it looks a bit fishy.
Okay. So 523 on the live show, no guys, hand rising. So what was I going to say? The next point I want to move on to, obviously, we need to talk football. We can't just dwell on this all the time. So the next point that I want to push on to is our Europa League group. So I personally think that group, the group is nearly harder than our Champions League group was last season. I don't see us making any inroads into the competition based on what we have at the moment. And unless there's massive changes, I honestly can't see us making any inroads into this competition. So, Joe, what's your view on the group that we've drawn?
It's absolutely irrelevant. It's so what? It's 7 Thursday nights and 1 Wednesday night starting away to Red Star Belgrade. But a quick advertising push for ourselves and for Mal content. So if we get about 500 people watching this live, before we started there, it was 1,400 odd subscribers. So please, if you like our message, click on subscribe, click on the bell, and that will give you notifications when we're going out. And the more views that we get, the more subscribers we get, the higher up we get on the YouTube analytics. So if there's one small thing you can do tonight, you might or you might not have cancelled your direct debit for the Europa League, but it's a little bit easier to click on the subscribe and the bell for notifications, and then you can listen to us bringing joy and happiness every Monday at 6:30. So that's a guarantee. And when the humble pie is to be served up, I'll be at the front of the queue, but I suspect I'll not be getting served it for a while, but Europa League is completely irrelevant. If we were in a strong position and going forward, that would be a group you could look at and say, oh, there's some decent matches in there. We can maybe make progress. With a bit of luck, we might be in the top 8. We'll certainly be in the top 24, and there'll be a knockout match after a knockout match. Remember that? In 2004, we beat Barcelona. Alan Thompson at home, John Kennedy and David Marshall away from home. We celebrated it, and we've been waiting a little while since then. But at that time, we'd a recently appointed chief executive officer, and he's made sure that we haven't got near progress in Europe since then. But the Europa League means very little. It's going to be a sideshow. I mind when we were in the Europa League in the COVID season under Neil Lennon. We were 2-0 up away to AC Milan and managed to lose 4-2. It was horrific. Slavia Prague reserves beat us 4-1 home and away. So, under Ange, it was reasonable. We beat Ferencvaros home and away. We came up against tough teams in Betis and Leverkusen. But it's a club that's on the slide. The Europa League isn't going to be any big factor in the season ahead. I can't get any excitement for it because I know the direction the club's going in. There's far bigger issues this season ahead. The executives against the manager with the club and the team is the consequences in all this. So I'll pass on the Europa League straight over my head.
You're the same, James?
I am absolutely the same. To say that I'm underwhelmed is an understatement. I genuinely could not care. I know there's a lot of your fans who for a few years now have been saying, what we need is a year in the Europa League to see how well we do and stuff. I don't even think the board has equipped us for that level, so I don't even care. I would normally... I said last season, right, because I was still a bit upset about the summer transfer window because it took so long to get deals done and I didn't think we filled every position we needed to fill. And I thought that it was a bit of a shit show last summer as well. And I was still in a bit of a huff and I said that I wasn't going to go to a single one of the Champions League games at Celtic Park. And there I was at every single one of them. and I am watching these in the pub. I will not set foot inside the ground for a single one of them. And I know that I mean that this time. And I know that I will see it through. And I will watch every game in the pub. I have zero interest in it as a competition. Zero interest. And I've been saying it for a few years. I don't regard it as being anywhere near the caliber of the Champions League in terms of the teams involved or the money involved or anything about it. Nothing about it interests me at all. And I'm certainly not going to be selling any money for it. Just no chance whatsoever. I would rather go down the local boozer and give them the money. I just think it's horrendous that we've ended up here. And I don't even care if we go on a good run and win a lot of the games in it. The way I feel about the whole club right now is just really low and apathetic. And I won't try and arouse myself to care about stuff that the people that run the club don't care about.
Yeah, I think that's apathy is the general feeling amongst the fan base at the moment, but apathy is probably not going to do us any favours. You know, if we want to right this wrong, apathy is not going to do us any favours. We've got 2 weeks to gather our thoughts, and I'm sure there are plenty of people out there at the moment who are coming up with a strategy, especially when it comes to the Celtic Trust. But as Joe probably pointed out earlier on there's things need to change there too. So if things can change there for the better, but as a fan base, we need to become united. This whole attitude, you know, our factions that we have and happy clappers and so on and so forth, all that needs to come to a finish. We need to have a united fan base who are 100% on board wanting the best for the club. But we never touched on the Kairat game, guys. And I know that's... We need to lance the boil there, maybe, do we? Because, yeah, I think we'll use that as our finishing point tonight. And it brings us back to the whole "I told you so" scenario, which we definitely, that was not one scenario that we wanted. But we kept warning it was going to happen. And I hate, you know, to feel like a doom-monger. But people need to know the truth. You can't just bury your head in the sand and ignore what's going on. And I think for too long, that's been one of the main problems with the fan base at Celtic. We have buried our heads in the sand for too long. We have allowed, you know, this to progress. And I said in an article I wrote on Saturday, and I got a huge reaction from that article, actually. I said that we are part of the problem because we facilitate it. And that's probably, you know, everybody's saying, cancel your direct debit, stop paying them the money. And as long as we keep giving them the money, we are facilitating the way that they behave. So I know you made the point on it, James, when you were talking earlier on, you know, that people could start there. They could start doing that. You've said you're going to go to the pub. You're not going to go to the Europa League games. This is going to have a knock-on effect financially for the club. It has to have. But, I mean, do we still do it at the same time? Do we want to go back to the days of top tier closed? I mean, we don't want that either. But we could end up there. We could end up there.
The club doesn't seem to care if that's what happens.
Yeah, but, I mean, these guys are all about the money. Maybe it is what needs to happen, but... So to go back to Kairat, like, under no circumstances should we have ever been in a position where we were losing to a team like that. And I think if we look at the game itself, or put the game in perspective, when I was watching the game, I probably went into the game with the same sort of feeling that I had going into yesterday's game, that we weren't going to get much out of it. But for me, and I wrote an article about it afterwards, it seemed very reminiscent of the cup final against Aberdeen. It was a very similar performance. Even Yang's performance was very similar. And because it was so reminiscent of the Aberdeen Cup final, you got the same feeling that you got in that Cup final. And I knew when Maeda got clean through that he was going to sky that. You just knew he was going to sky that he was not going to put it in the net. And I knew when we went to penalties that keeper was on fire. He was like a man on... He was on an adrenaline rush throughout the whole game. 21 years of age, he became the hero of the night for Kairat. And I knew if it went to a penalty shootout against this kid, that he was going to stand up and he was going to be counted. But at the same time, yeah, you could see the confidence was sapped in our players. You even Ida's body language when he stepped up to take that penalty. I just said it. Before he ever took the penalty, he's going to miss that. You could just feel it. It was in the air. It was just that kind of game. And it was like everything had just come together on that night to ensure that we walked out of that arena, with ourselves in disarray and, you know, having lost the Champions League finals. And I said, you know, Boyce made the point last week where he said, out of 19 qualifiers now, we've missed out on 12. And if you were to average that our earnings, we go back to the earlier ones, you know, saying, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So if you were to average out our possible earnings in the Champions League at 25 million and you multiply that by 12 failures, that shouldn't, or even if you did half, that's 150 million in revenue lost. Even if you did 12, it's 300 million in revenue lost for failure to qualify for the Champions League because we never prepared. And if you look at it in that term, in terms of those kind of figures, and if those kind of figures had been brought into the club and washed through the club in a correct and professional manner, then the reality is that we could be as strong as a club like Bruges, trading like a club like Bruges, and hammering sides that we, you know, like Bruges are, you know, they're a quality side. We saw that ourselves when we played them last season. But that's what we should be aspiring. That's what we should be aspiring to be, in my view. So I'll go to you, James. Just give your few thoughts on the game against Clairet.
Well, first, you mentioned exactly the right club. If you have a look at the income disparity between ourselves and Bruges, it's not massive. Bruges earn slightly more money, but they earn that money because their player trading model is everything that ours is not.
Yeah.
I think they sold 80 million worth of talent, but they spent more than 30 million going out and replacing the guys with 5-6 million pound players, exactly what we pointedly refused to do. All the people who've criticised our signing strategy for last summer, they fail to consider a couple of things. That signing a guy like Engels for 11 million pound is what top European teams do. They will spend that kind of money on an up-and-coming Belgian international, and they won't consider it any major big deal. The idea that you shouldn't leave players like that on the bench is also pretty ridiculous. When you look at Bruges, we're able to bring 4 or 5 players in the 5 million plus category on against the Ibrox mob, even while they were spanking them all over the pitch. It's fairly common you have players with high transfer values sitting on the bench all over Europe. They used to call that strength and depth, which, as you pointed out earlier on, we don't have at the moment.
They had 3 20-year-olds in their defence.
It just so happens that the one area of the team where we are the strongest is in the middle of the park, and we have 5 or 6 options, and of which he's only one of them. And I don't know about you, but I quite like the idea of having an 11 million pound player sitting on the bench some weeks. It does suggest that some work has gone into that area of the pitch. And, you know, I mean, the Clairet game is an utter disaster, but it's nothing that Rodgers didn't see coming at a mile down the road. I understand the people who want to hold Rodgers accountable for it. One of the problems at the club right now is we don't have anybody who wants to be accountable, right? And it doesn't want to do. It doesn't want to take any accountability. And Rodgers, by the way, is as guilty of that as anybody at times, the way he passes the buck. I mean, I wrote a piece early on the transfer window when he was doing all the you know, I've tried to make my case stuff. Well, how hard have you tried, Brendan? You know what I mean? You're the guy in the manager's chair. There was a time in the window where I didn't think he was fighting hard enough to get the players he wanted. Now, we're not privy to everything that goes on behind the scenes, but I just didn't see any evidence that he was willing to really take the board on the matter. Later on in the transfer window, he tried to when things became increasingly desperate. But this is nothing Rodgers didn't see coming at my elbow. Rodgers knows what the team is set up today, and he knows what it can do in most circumstances. And he knew that we weren't properly equipped to deal with a Champions League qualifier for a team that might just put 11 men behind the ball at Celtic Park and hold it for a draw and take us to a tougher way tie. He knew we weren't equipped for that and said it often enough. He doesn't get a pass for it, by the way. He doesn't get a pass. He shouldn't get a pass for it. He definitely doesn't get a pass for yesterday. Because the guy did not make any effort to change the tactical approach yesterday. Not one effort. And the fact that we've now gone three games in a row without scoring a goal and tried the same tactical approach in all three of those games is pretty abysmal. And he carries the can for that. And there's no doubt that he carries the can for that. But the Kaira result over two legs is none that Rodgers couldn't have seen a mile down the road. Because he knows that the club, he knows that the present team is not equipped to play the kind of football he wants. What amazes me about Rodgers and what depresses me slightly is that he doesn't seem to be the guy he used to be. The guy who would have made five different tactical variations in that game yesterday just to get the result. And there was no tactical variation against Kaira either. And I find that really depressing. And it's really hard to watch. And I know that I cannot watch that version of this team for the rest of the season. That's why I wrote that piece yesterday after the game, where I said, if Rodgers doesn't want to manage anymore, if he doesn't want to be here anymore, then as far as I'm concerned, he's absolved his responsibility for that promise that he made the fans. Because that promise that he made the fans that he would be here for the 3 years, as far as I'm concerned, is only good if Rodgers intends to be Rodgers for those 3 years. And if he's gave up, then he can go, and I won't complain. And I won't blame him either, because I know the circumstances under which he's been made to work. And I don't think any fan would blame him.
Yeah.
Rodgers still thinks he owes us something. He owes us a hell of a lot more than he's delivering right now. That's what I would say.
Well, I mean, I think, and I'll let Joe make his comment on the Kaira game.
He's not to blame for this. But I think
if he's serious about making this last season of his a success, then he needs to do some soul searching with the squad. He needs to sit them down and he needs to ask them, you know, he needs to have a meeting with the team. Look, I'm sure he has meetings with the team all the time, but he needs to sit down and have a serious meeting with them and say, look, guys, this is where we're at. This is the position we've been put in, but it's up to us to make the best of it. And it's up to us to, you know, do the best we can under the circumstances. That's probably easier said than done. No two ways about it. Especially, as I said, if we get a bad run of injuries, it's going to make things very, very tough. But they all need to do some soul searching about what they want out of this season and where they want to see themselves at the end of this season. So look, I'll leave it at that. I'll move on to Joe.
Right, is that as bad as some people think he is, I know, and we should all know, everyone here should all know, that the alternatives are going to be a lot worse. A lot worse. So
if they all pull together and they all work hard throughout the season, that only works for them. That works to their benefit. It works to Rodgers' benefit. Playing lethargically like they did yesterday and showing the kind of apathy they showed yesterday, and they're the key. They're the buzzwords today. But playing that way is not going to do them any favors, and it's certainly not going to put them in the shop window if any of these guys want out. So they've got to realize that if they want to be, players who are taken seriously and want a future in the game with a big club, because they all, you know, I mean, it's always been Celtic as a stepping stone throughout the years, you know, but that could all come to a halt as well with the way things are going. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things these guys need to think about and a lot of things that the manager needs to think about and talk about. Anyway, Joe, for the last few words there, what was your take on the whole Kaira debacle, the calamity in El Mahdi, as I called it?
Thank you, Kaira. It took 5 minutes after the match to realise it would be utterly horrific, that squad going into the Champions League with the circumstances inside the club.
Yeah.
Nothing would have changed. I think after the game in Kaira, Rodgers says he didn't know what impact it would have on budgeting and transfers. Abracadabra, 2 days after it, we sign a left-back on loan for a season with no obligation to buy, and a winger that we've been chasing for a year. And then on Friday, Rodgers said, it wouldn't have made any difference. The budget is the budget. So if we'd reached the Champions League, it would have benefited the bank balance, and that team would have been horrific. We all enjoyed Giovanni van Bronckhorst in the 2022 Champions League. We could have been close to it. It was horrific performances, but I'm not too upset about it, because the team wouldn't have benefited. There'd been more money in the bank, and the damage it would have done to the club would have been horrific. I see folks saying about we could sign this one, we could sign that one. The Slovan Bratislava centre forward we're interested in January. He's apparently joined Middlesbrough. Yeah. Nothing's going to change. We could sign four great players. There's no chance of it happening, but if we did sign three or four great players between now and 11 o'clock, they're coming into a club where the atmosphere is horrible. The players all know it. The manager is... the manager's basically on notice. He's going at the end of this season. The folk that are apparently running the club are quite happy with that. They would rather undermine him so as that the last thing they want is Rodgers going off into the sunset in the back of great success. But again, all the folks slagging off Rodgers, great, great, fire in, on you go. I know he's made plenty of mistakes. He talks too much. His style of play can be a bit inflexible. But I will guarantee you 100%, there is not an Ange Postecoglou ready to walk in at Celtic. Whoever replaces Rodgers is going to be a massive downgrade on him. It's not going to be someone that's managed in the English Premier League. It's not going to be someone that's finished runners-up in English Premier League. It's not going to be someone that's won the FA Cup. We're in for a massive downgrade in terms of the manager. It could be a long, long time. I would say we will not see Champions League football in the next 3 years. If we win the league, I think there's three qualifiers to get through. So if you can't beat Kaira in one qualifier, you're not going to get through three qualifiers against teams that are motivated and ambitious. So our last five Champions League exits have been against teams that we've got a bigger coefficient for, a far bigger budget, and it's all been very predictable. So Kaira joined that horrific role of honour with Malmo, Maribor, Cluj, Ferencvaros, AEK Athens and Mitterrand. It's what Celtic do. So there's all sorts of cosmetics, do this, do that, change this, change that. But while we've still got the same people inside the club working for their own benefits, working to protect themselves and prepared to shaft anyone. I've been to the AGMs and the managers change quite regular, but the grey suits, the dull, stale men behind that never open their gobs, they rarely change. So thank you, Kaira. You spared us from it. The Europa League will be pretty grim and dismal, but it won't be the same high-profile embarrassments that would have come our way from Kaira. So on that cheery note, half empty.
Yeah.
I have to admit, it's scary to think the kind of doings we would have got in the Champions League with this team.
Yeah.
Is. And playing this way, yeah.
Well, look, guys, maybe we have to... I suppose, look, we'll finish up now because we've gone well over time, but maybe we have to look at it from the perspective that if we do what we need to do as a fan base, that maybe this board won't be in place next year. James, I just want to say this before you go. I know we said earlier on that this is easier said than done, but you made a very good point that, like, if we applied enough pressure, it could be easier than we imagine. Desmond is going to be the guy who works against the fan base out of spite. We've seen that happen before. But if we put enough pressure on Lowell and Nicholson and it's done in the right way, you know, we could be looking at a season next season where these guys aren't in the building. And if the fans are able to work together and push for a decent CEO to be brought into the club, another Don McKay, essentially, you know, somebody who is forward thinking and somebody who's capable of actually lifting the club and taking the club to where it belongs. That's what we need to be doing as a fan base. That's what we need to be pushing for. And we need to stop using the word impossible when it comes to these guys. We need to stop thinking it's impossible. We need to start with a mentality that this is possible, that we can force change at Celtic. The fan base did it before. They should be able to do it again. And we have to change our mentality in that regard. We have to change our viewpoint in that regard. I definitely think that. So, James, just your final point there before we finish up.
Well, you said it, mate. It's not just that we have to stop using the word impossible. We also have to start thinking in terms of imperative, because if you feel in any way troubled by what we've watched over the course of this summer, If you feel in any way scared for the future of the club because of that, you have to try and imagine a very simple scenario. You have to try and imagine the same people who can't convince players to sign for us going to speak to another manager during the summer and try to get them to commit. What's the transfer strategy going to be? What's the signing policy going to be? You know, the minute these guys are asked serious questions to which they have to give honest answers, any credible candidate is going to walk away. So if you think that this summer was bad, we're going to see an even worse one next summer.
If things keep going the way they are.
Yeah, exactly, right. And it won't even be about the kind of players we sign. It will start with a manager and a managerial hunt that will take far longer than it needs to take. We'll be right up on those Champions League qualifiers before we even get someone agree to take the job. The caliber of signings at that point will be the players that he is given. Don't be surprised if, like what happened when Brendan came back, we've already got signings in the building done well. There was no manager in place at all, right? Because we signed home before Rodgers had agreed to return. So his team was getting built for him before he was even in the door. That was the first warning sign. And maybe Rodgers should have heeded it. But damn sure we better be heeding it now, because this summer is nothing compared to next summer. Next summer's the really scary one. The same people in charge of our club, the same people in charge of our strategy, the same people in charge of negotiations who are doing these. That's a terrifying thought. That's an actual keep you awake at night terrifying thought. We can't allow that to happen. If we're going to avoid it, we need to start working on it right now, because we can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's a fact. So look, we wind it up for tonight. Obviously, we have 2 weeks of an international break now, which is the worst possible time with the way things are going. But I think the fans need to regroup. I think the fans need to be constructive in the way that they approach the next home game and the message that they want to get across to the board. I think that's where it needs to begin. So it's been a very good show, I think. Thanks a million to everybody for tuning in. It's been, you know, as we said, record numbers. And as Joe said, if you like what we do, hit subscribe, click like, and thumbs up. And we'll be back again next week for more of the same. We'll probably dissect the remainder of this deadline transfer window, or deadline transfer day, or, you know, transfer deadline day, and discuss what the fallout is of that and what we have to face into for the rest of the, well, the next few months coming up to January anyway. We don't expect much to be done in January anyway, guys, do we, if these guys are still in place? So so look, we'll make it a wrap for tonight. Thanks for your contribution, Joe, and thanks for your contribution, James. It's been very good. And you'll see us back next week. Talk to you then. Joe's have a good one. Joe's in the chair next week. Yeah, exactly. Talk then, guys. Take it easy. Have a good one. Yeah.